Now to Jaden, to Miley Brown, and it is in, and Beloit wins 25-17. And for the sixth time in the past 8 years, the Beloit Lady Trojans are headed to the state volleyball tournament.
I knew if we'd settled down. I thought we started off a little slow and just were not playing our game. Told the girls, you got to hit at them. You got to swing. I knew if we started swinging, we were ever bit as good as them. It's not better. I thought our back row was better than theirs coming in, but we had to swing and not let them set up their stud. As they went to our lot, and if we could get them out of system where she couldn't get a nice set and hammered every time, I knew we could get them. And once the girls settled down, honestly, sometimes you wonder if being young helps. They don't panic in this type of moment. They just play. But this group of girls, I've seen them come along since they're fifth, sixth graders. They're just competitive too. And you know, you don't teach that. That just comes within. And it's that whole group. They're competitive. They want to win and they'll do what it takes. You know, said play every point like it's the last. So I was just so proud of how they played today. We really stepped it up and played our game.
Beloit Trojan head volleyball coach Brandy Paul is the Beloit Lady Trojans, one of four teams from our area going on to the state volleyball tournament this Friday and Saturday as Beloit punches their ticket for the sixth time in the last 8 years. And we're going to talk Smith Center, St. John's, Tipton, Sylvan, Lucas volleyball here in just a moment as well. But let's kind of put a wrap on Beloit. Brandy Paul and her team, we said 6 of 8 years they've made it to state. We'll be back in Hutchinson this year coming up this Friday and Saturday. Here's Coach Paul on what it means to the program on making it to state 6 of the last 8 years.
I just love the way the culture has, you know, when I took over the program, I can remember Casey Seifert telling me, it'll take you 5 years to at least, you know, build it. And I said, I don't want to take 5 years. I can't do that. I don't want to take 5 years. So what we've done for this program, and it's not me, all I've done is open up the opportunities. It's the kids and the community, the parents. Mm-hmm. That's what does it. I've opened up the opportunity, opened the gym, got some teams going when they're younger. And that is the culture. That's our community. You know, you give them an opportunity, and our parents are so supportive and pushing their kids, and our mm-hmm. kids want to. And, you know, if it wasn't for them doing it and putting in the work, you know, that's what's built our program and our culture. And then I love just to see, if you see these kids that are here, we have our little fifth and sixth graders, and they have a ball out. They're not even watching us. They're out playing because they're ready to be on this court. Yeah. So it's just become, and sometimes that makes me nervous because it's such expected. Sometimes, like when we lost that Southeast, you know, that run for league, it's like they don't know. Everybody's after us, and right. We got that target on our back, and where we started to get to there. Yeah. And so sometimes, you know, it's back and forth, but I think it's just expected. And so I think that's the benefit of it, is it's expected. And someone told me that they just expect to win now.
Yeah.
Before, we might have fallen under pressure, whereas now they just, that's what they do.
And we have some volleyball teams in this area. They're certainly used to making to states, and it's pretty impressive stuff, as Beloit is one of four area teams that qualify for state volleyball with sub-state titles on Saturday. Of course, Smith Center made it. St. John's, Tipton, Sylvan, Lucas, more on them in a moment. Beloit opened up sub-state play with a two-set win over Riley County, a sweep of Marysville in the semis, and in the finals, they're down 17-12 in the first set, and all of a sudden win 5 straight points and won 25-22, 25-17 over Phillipsburg. I thought that match would go 3 sets, and the way it started, it looked like it was Phillipsburg was maybe going to even win it. So Beloit going to state, and they are the number 5 seed in the 3A state tournament in Hutchinson. They have a 34-5 record to open play Friday afternoon at 3:30 against number 4 seed Cheney. Then they'll play a number 1 seed Nemaha Central, who is 42-1. That's at 6:30. They'll play the 8 seed Smoky Valley at 7:30. They seem to run into Smoky Valley a lot at state. Lost a couple matches to Smoky Valley a year ago. This year they beat Smoky Valley in 3 sets at the Southeast Saline Invitational. That very well could determine whether Beloit makes out pool play or not. Those matches can be heard on Katy Country 94 and Katy Country 94.com. Dusty Smith Center. Well, you know, here's a crazy thing about the 3A state volleyball tournament. All 8 teams that made it last year made it this year. The exact same field of teams. It's crazy. Makes my job a lot easier. I just got to update every one of the capsules for the teams and update the rosters, and I'm good to go. So I have no problem with that. And it's very crazy that it's the exact same 8. So those teams, we can't sit here and say, oh, it's the first time in state in so many years. No, last year, all those teams were here. And there's ones that are always there. Cheney's there almost all the time. Heritage Christian's there almost all the time. Beloit's there almost all the time. Smoky Valley's there a lot. Nemaha Central's there a lot. And now Riverton and Eureka going back-to-back years after they hadn't been there in a while. So Goodland's now been 3 three straight years. So that state tournament is absolutely loaded. When you're 34-5 and you're a five seed, that's a loaded state tournament. The worst record is 8 losses, 32-8 Smoky Valley, and they have a lot of losses to teams that are ranked that are at the state tournament, including one to Beloit. That's pretty amazing. And then there's Smith Center. Just go ahead and pencil them in, right? Just pencil them in before the season begins, put them at state, even though they lost two players that play college ball.
Yeah, and you're going to hear Coach Lynn talk about that part of it just a little bit. But I did say at the beginning of the year, I think if people remember, don't just like write this team off because they don't have Talon, Rentschler, and Ashland Long. And so they were a team that had to learn a little bit about themselves and change a little bit of what they did. But yeah, they're going to state for the sixth straight year, 9 of the last 10. And obviously had a battle there on Saturday in the sub-state championship. They beat Hill City in 2. Relative ease there to open the tournament, but had to fight through a 21-19 deficit in the second set against Hoxie and came back to win that one in 2 against Hoxie there. And then Ellenwood match was a wild one. Just real quick thing about this, it was Ellenwood took a 15-9 lead in the first set, and then Coach Lynn called a timeout because he didn't want to get away from his team. Then all of a sudden, they're talking at the scorer's table for a couple minutes, and it changed to 14-10. And then this went on for about 5 more minutes. Coach for Ellenwood got real mad, threw his clipboard over to the side, and was real frustrated. And then all of a sudden, it was 13-11. It was 14-10. It was 15-9, then 14-10, then 13-11. I'm like, what is going on here? This is a heck of a break for Smith Center. If this is going to be the score, instead of being down 15-9, they're down 13-11. They said Ellenwood was out of rotation twice, and so they gave Smith Center 2 points for that. I thought maybe retroactively you'd make it 13-10 and not count the second point that you're out of rotation on serve.
Because you should have got the first one.
Yeah.
That's on the officials. They should have got the first one.
And I don't think the way Ellenwood's coach acted that he gave himself any favors, right?
No.
And so all of a sudden it's 13-11, and then Smith Center thinks, hey, we're right back into this thing.
Yeah.
They ended up winning the first set, lost the second, and won the third. Got a nice run there in the third set. But it was wild and crazy. I mean, that changed, obviously, the whole momentum of what was going on there in set one, and clearly helps Smith Center. Ellenwood's probably going to say, hey, it was the official's fault, but it wasn't. They had the wrong person serving, but the officials didn't see it quick enough, and then that led to a crazy thing there. But Smith Center did end up getting that win in 3 sets, had a great third set against Ellenwood, and pulled away and got that championship again 6 years in a row, 9 of the last 10. It was win number 1,000 for Nick Lynn in the sub-state championship.
Perfect time for it.
Absolutely. And he's like, at least I don't have to worry about that next week. It's out of the way, and he obviously gave all the credit to his kids and all that. So, but Coach Lynn did comment about the day and getting back to state with this group here in 2022.
We took nothing for granted. I mean, we knew Hoxie would be tough. It was a third time playing them, and to get down, I think it was 21-19, and them serving, we still thought we could win. We thought we were, to us, we thought we were the better team, even at that point. But in a way, I think that helped us later in the day because we faced adversity there. And then the championship match, you know, I doubted the whole night. Like I thought they were good. I mean, like really good. And I thought they had a lot of good hitters. And I watched it warm up and thinking, oh, how are we going to block that, you know? But our kids, you know, I don't know how much credit we were given after losing Talon and Ashland. I mean, you saw that last year and that big presence we really no longer had. And it's just a lot of things coming together starting in June, you know? And it's these kids. It's not me. I mean, they're mad at me all the time because I work them, you know, but I think they like this.
Yeah, this is the reward at the end of the rainbow, right? The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And I saw they put 1,000 ping pong balls in his vehicle to celebrate 1,000 wins. Now, first of all, who has access to 1,000 ping pong balls and who actually counted to make sure there was exactly 1,000 would be my next question. But there's a whole bunch of them in his car, and there's a picture of him, and he has a big smile on his face. And I think that's pretty doggone cool. And he's cutting himself a little bit short there, of course, you know, very humble, and he's not wanting to take a lot of credit. But there is a constant there with the basketball program, the volleyball program, and that's Nick Lynn.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about that on Friday. It's like when I went up to their state celebration, he had girls from his first season all the way through last season, like record a short video congratulating him on his first state title in volleyball. And you can see the impact that he's had on that group. I mean, you don't last that long without doing it the right way and having quite an impact on a lot of young women.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, yeah, Smith Center's headed to state again, and they will start on Saturday – or Friday morning, excuse me. We will have coverage Friday morning starting on Katy Country 94 with the first match for Smith Center. as they're the number 2 seed. They'll play number 7 seed Valley Heights at 9:30. 6 seed Garden playing 11:30 approximately, and then number 3 seed Inman approximately 1:30. We don't have all the same 8 teams there, but Hillsborough's back. Smith Center actually caught a break because Sedgwick lost in the sub-state championship and did not make it. Sedgwick was 36-0, so they would have been the 1. Hillsborough would have been the 2, and Smith Center would have been the 3, but now they avoid Hillsborough until possibly the semis, so they're not in the pool, so kind of would mess up possible. Well, it wouldn't mess up a possible state championship.
No,
could see them in the state championship if everybody goes undefeated and goes the right way. But there's a long way to that for Smith Center. I know it's going to be a tough field for them, even in pool play coming up on Friday. So Saturday, they would hope that they could get out and maybe see a rematch with Hillsborough in the championship. That crossed their fingers.
Who knocked off Sedgwick?
Oh man, Inman. Yeah, Inman is in the pool with Smith Center.
Sedgwick
is
36-0.
Yeah, Inman. Wow. Inman only has 4 or 5 losses, so it wasn't like it was a huge upset, but Sedgwick was actually 38-0 going into the championship.
Perfect season, you don't make it to state. Yeah.
They won the first set like 25-15, and then Inman beat them in the second, too. Yeah,
wow.
it was wild. It's like, that's tough
way to go out.
Yeah.
Tough way to go out, especially if they have any seniors as well. So Smith Center matches will be heard on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com starting about 9:15 with pre-match coverage this Friday on Katy Country 94. St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jays making it state as well.
Yes, they won their own 1A Division II sub-state there in Beloit. It is the 6th time in school history that St. John's Tipton has made it to state as the cooperative, and the first time since 2018. So Luddy Jays are back there at state. They won over Southern Cloud and 2 in the semis, beat Thunder Ridge in the championship 25-15 and 25-20 to make it to state. And the Luddy Jays will be playing on Friday morning. They are the number 4 seed at the 1A Division II state tournament in Emporia at White Auditorium, 31-7. And their matches will begin 10 o'clock Friday morning, so we'll have probably pre-match coverage around 9:45 on Z96.3 The Lake. They take on 5 seed Central Christian there at 10 o'clock, followed by a noon matchup with number 8 Ingalls and number 1 seed Lebo at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. So the Luddy Jays, a great season for them, and headed back to state in Division 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll have all their coverage, all the spikes, bumps, digs, serves, blocks, everything of all 3 teams. Beloit, Smith Center on Katy Country 94 coming up on Friday and hopefully Saturday, and St. John's Tipton on Z96.3 The Lake. And Sylvan Lucas, we expected, would probably make state, and they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a great tournament there at Clifton Clyde. Had a first-round bye, so in the semis they won in 2 over the host school Clifton Clyde, and then beat Washington County 25-19, 25-13 in the championship there in Clyde. 37-2, and they're the number 2 seed at state, facing number 7 St. Francis 4:30, Donovan West 6:30, Pretty Prairie 8:30 Friday in Dodge City. So that's a look at Sylvan Lucas. You can find all these sub-state brackets, by the way, and all the state matchups and pairings. Everything's posted there at ncksports.com.
And we also have more good news, as we have many that made it to state cross country.
Yeah, cross country was wild. There was a long list of people, especially from the entire ncksports.com area, that took a long time to put all that together and find out who made it to state. But as far as our immediate area here, most of our teams were at 1A, and that's where most of our state qualifiers are coming from. All of our area teams actually were at 1A in Washington County. The Osmond girls took the team title at the regional. St. John's won a tiebreak over Osmond for the boys' championship. The Osmond girls had 3 of the top 4 runners. Maya Schweitzer won the 5K with a time of 21:43.19. Ryan Berticelli finished in 3rd, and Kate Kendig was 4th for Osmond as far as the individual standings. But again, they qualify their entire team there. Also qualifying for state were the St. John's runners Jane Letourneau in 6th place and Emma Mick in 13th. On the boys' side, Grady Bussing of Axtell was the regional champ. Johnny Hamill of Osmond finished in 2nd place. Jonas Letourneau of St. John's finished 3rd. Graham Bales of Osmond 5th. Chris LaRocque St. John's took 7th. And Aiden Conrad of Osmond was 9th. They were all on state team qualifiers. And then individual state qualifiers from the area there at Washington County included Harlan Pancost of Sylvan Lucas in 10th, Tegan Reeves of Pike Valley 12th. Again, you can find all that info at ncksports.com. And in Class 3A, the Beloit Trojans were at the Goodland Regional. And as expected, Lance Lundin, a 2-time state placer, made it back to state. He finished 5th place at that regional there in Goodland to qualify for state for the 3rd straight season. So congratulations to Lance as well there at Beloit. Full results for cross country for regionals also at ncksports.com.
All right. And then also we have teams that made it to the state high school football playoffs, of course. I'll just run through some of the teams that we cover in our area. And six-player Division I, the state football playoff bracket, Natoma will be at Lost Springs coming up on Thursday, it appears. And Teskey will be hosting Chautauqua in eight-man Division I. It is Clifton Clyde will be hosting Quinter on Thursday, and Lincoln will be on the road at 6 o'clock at Atwood to take on Rollins County. And in, they say eight-player Division II. I'm sorry, I'm never going to do that. I'm going to always say eight-man. Eight-man Division II, St. John's Tipton will be hosting Frankfort. I don't know if that's going to be a 6 or a 7 o'clock kick. Some years it's a 6, sometimes it's a 7. Do we have any word on that?
I have not heard on that one. Actually, let me double-check. I think I have. Okay. I have gotten a text on that, actually. Yeah, 6 o'clock.
Okay, yep. So 6 o'clock there for St. John's Tipton and Frankfort. They've met in the playoffs before, and that'll be there in Beloit coming up on Thursday. Lakeside at Hanover will be at 6 o'clock as well on Thursday, and we will have Lakeside at Hanover. Jason Broadfoot with the call coming up on Thursday. Pregame at 5:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. Pike Valley is going to be at Axtell. Ugh, good luck with that one. Osborne will be hosting Lynn. If Osborne wins their first two matchups, they would play Axtell more than likely in the state quarterfinals. Osborne has won 7 in a row since starting the year with a loss to Hill City. They'll host Lynn on Thursday night. Thunder Ridge won their district. They will be in Kensington hosting Wilson in the first round. And if you want to look ahead there, they could face Victoria in the state quarterfinals. And Sylvan Lucas at 6-2, they will host St. Francis coming up on Thursday as well. That's 8-man Division II. Actually, I covered all of that, 8-man 1 and 2. Now, Class 1A, Sacred Heart gets in with a record of 4-4. They will be at Marion, and Smith Center, 6-2, will host Whitewater Remington. They will play that game. I don't have official word yet if they're going to play this Thursday or Friday. I had a text in, and I got information last night that they said that it was up to Keisha. Smith Center, I assume, wants to move it to Thursday for state volleyball. That's mm-hmm. what they've done the last few years. Whitewater Remington has a bit of a road trip to come to Smith Center. They probably would rather play on the Thursday. So since the teams can't agree or schools can't agree, it ends up being put into guess whose hands? Keisha. So Keisha gets to decide whether or not that game's going to be played on Thursday or Friday between Smith Center and Whitewater Remington. And so we don't have official word on what Keisha decided on that one. If both schools agree to play on Thursday, then that's what they usually do. Of course, you also have to make sure that you can get officials on Thursday. Class 2A, state football playoffs. Minneapolis will be at Rossville. Southeast Saline will be at Gypsum. They'll be at Gypsum. They'll host Haven. And also Beloit will be hosting Larned. Last I know, that'll probably be a 7 o'clock kick on Friday, although I don't know officially whether that'll be 6 or 7 o'clock, but I think it's going to be 7 o'clock on Friday. So Beloit will not be playing on Thursday. They will be playing on Friday, which will make it very difficult for Beloit Trojan fans that want to support both teams because the volleyball team will be playing the exact same time as the football team on Friday night. Also makes it tough for us to cover as much as we'd like to. I would love to see that Beloit game being moved to a Thursday. It would probably help out fans that would want to attend both, and it would also help us out, no doubt. But Beloit will be playing Larned on Friday, I've been told, just a matter of 6 or 7 o'clock. So we'll have a live video stream of Beloit Larned on Friday, but there will be no play-by-play announcing because we will be at state volleyball covering the ladies and doing full play-by-play there in Hutchison. So Beloit Larned, it'll be a live video stream, but with no play-by-play announcing, natural sound there, and that'll be on Friday night. So that's a look at Class 2A. Class 3A, Concordia will be at Wichita Collegiate. Concordia 2-6 on the season. They were the fourth-ranked team out of their district, and that's the area team that competes in Class 3A. For all the brackets, whether it be volleyball, whether it be football, cross-country qualifiers, all of that information is available to you at ncksports.com. So once again, here's our broadcast schedule for this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday, we'll have one football game for you. Lakeside has a long road trip to Hanover, and that's why we're going to be doing that one. Lakeside at Hanover, first round Division II playoffs in eight-man. That'll be on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. Pregame at 5:30. Jason with the call there. I've already told Jason, dude, we got to be efficient with our time. So I said, you need to be on the phones right now, getting a hold of volleyball teams and setting up stuff at Hanover. And because Jason's going to get to do football and volleyball. We're making up for when he didn't get to do play-by-play because of lightning damage to this studio. So he's going to get to do a double dip. He's only one of the three that's going to do the double dip. I mean, we're really putting him to work, man.
Yeah.
He's earning his pay. He's going to be doing football there, Lakeside Hanover. Makes sense because he goes that way, and then he could just head on down to Emporia. The good news for Jason is he doesn't have to – I don't know if he's listening and he knows this, but he'll probably come up here in just a few minutes, which is fine. Jason will not have to get up super early on Friday to host a morning show. That's the good news.
Yeah.
That'll be my job. That's the good news. Of course, it depends how far he travels from Hanover to Emporia, if he's going to go all the way or stay in Topeka or Manhattan or whatever the case may be before he gets to St. John's Tipton, because of course they're going to be playing on Friday, the Lady Blue Jays, and they will be on Z96.3 The Lake with pregame at 9:45, and they'll play at 9:45, noon, and 3 o'clock approximate times there. And then Dusty will make the trip to Dodge City. He knows that he don't need the GPS to get there.
No.
Dusty gets good Dodge City covering Smith Center, and he'll have Smith Center on Katy Country 94. 9:15 is pre-match coverage on Friday morning, then 11:30 and 1:30 approximately for the rest of their matches. I'll be in Hutchinson, cover the Beloit Lady Trojans, and the pre-match coverage at 3:15, and then 6:30 and 7:30, Beloit's matches. And those also will be on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Once again, Larnard at Beloit Football. Like I said, I was selfish. I was trying to do everything I could. I was like, how about you guys play on Thursday? I don't have any pull. I have no pull. They're going to stick with the Friday. Larnard might prefer to play on Friday because it's a school night, too. You have to get both schools to agree, or you put it in Keisha's hands. But it sounds like it's just going to be simply both schools are cool with playing on Friday night. So I guess what you might have is people at the football game are going to hopefully – they'll probably be pulling up the app, which would be smart. And you can be listening to the volleyball coverage while you may be watching a football game there in person, or maybe you are watching the video stream on your phone of the football while you're looking at the volleyball. I don't know how Beloit fans are going to do it. It's not ideal, that's for sure. But they did let school out Friday, so everybody can go down and watch volleyball. Of course, football team can't go down because they got a game that night. But everybody else is able to go down Friday because there is no school. So everybody rejoices, students and all. And I want to see a big representation from St. John's Tipton, Beloit, and Smith Center at State. Represent these girls. These young ladies have busted their butt just as much as football players have. All right, they've worked all summer long. They have put in the work. They put in the sweat. Some of them have had some serious injuries they bounce back from. And I mean, just the agility and the athleticism, the leaping ability. I mean, it is amazing when you watch good volleyball. And all three of these schools, and Sylvan Lucas as well, I play great volleyball. It is fun to watch. It's fun to cover. And so we're looking forward to having that on the radio coming up on Friday with St. John's Tipton on Z96.3 of Lake, Smith Center, Beloit on Katy Country 94, and then the live video stream, Larnard Beloit Football, NCKSSports.com, via Beloit Children's Channel. Once again, that'll just be a stream only, no play-by-play. And then I will attempt to do a local high school football scoreboard show from probably Hutchinson right there at the scores table, because I should be done and can do that, or back at the hotel for the wrap of the football games Friday, and then also wrap up what took place on Thursday. That'll be our final scoreboard show, and appreciate State Farm Insurance, Kevin Hewitt and Beloit, Marty Walters in Osborne being a sponsor of that once again this year. And a big thank you to Cunningham Telephone Keel being our exclusive sponsor, as always, for the Football Express throughout the season as well. Then, if St. John's Tipton, Smith Center, and Beloit make it out of pool play, we'll have all their matchups, the semis, and then either third place or the championship on Saturday. St. John's Tipton, if they make it to Saturday, they play the semis at 9, and that'd be on Z96.3. If Smith Center makes the semis, they'll play at 9 on Saturday. And then Beloit, if they make the semis, they would play at 1 o'clock. And once again, Beloit Smith Center Volleyball on Katy Country 94. So I think that covers that for now, and we'll continue to let you know. We have it posted at NCKSports.com. Anything else you want to add?
No, I can't attest if the past is any concern, that there will be great support for all those teams at the state tournament, right? I know for Smith Center for sure, over what I've seen the last few years, that they will be traveling to Dodge City to support their team. There's no question about that.
I hope Keisha does the right thing.
I do too.
Because to me, this is simple. You, if Whitewater Remington has a longer trip. I know they have school the next morning, but that when we have sub-state games on school nights, and Beloit girls had to go all the way to Council Grove on a school night last year. So, I mean, listen, it happens a lot. I mean, there's got long road trips on Thursday night for eight-man football in some cases. So if they end up saying, well, we're going to keep Smithsonian and Whitewater Remington on a Friday because of the travel, it's a school night. Okay, so you're basically saying, sorry, Smith Center, we don't really care about your volleyball team, so we're just going to go ahead and make that stay the way it is so that you can't go down and support your volleyball team in Dodge City. And it ain't Smith Center's fault that that's clear down in Dodge City either. I mean, so,
yeah,
you know, I think, I hope Keisha will make the right decision there, but we shall see. I don't know what Keisha's going to do one way or the other. I mean, no matter what they do, some will be upset about it. Remington will be upset if they have to play on Thursday probably, but when you schedule football on a Friday and you have volleyball on a Friday, you've kind of created part of the situation.
Oh, yeah.
And I know one of the big reasons why they did that, and it's not necessarily fully their fault at all, Keisha, is because a shortage of officials. That's it. That is a big part of this equation. Because it used to be that you'd play these games on Thursday, you didn't have to worry about these conflicts on Friday, 3A and down. And now it is on all 11-man football, unless the schools decide to move from Friday to Thursday. I'll give Nemaha Central a lot of credit. They're one of the top teams in the state in football. They didn't hesitate. They moved their football game from Friday to Thursday so that everybody can get there and support Nemaha Central, number one team in the state, 42-1 at volleyball and Hutch. Mm-hmm. They are one of the top two teams in the state in 2A, and they're going to play a day earlier. Yes, I know people are all about routines, right? Well, we want to be in our routines. Well, state championship football is on a Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You don't complain about that routine being changed all up and Thanksgiving 2 days prior. So I know coaches are all about routines. I get it. But if you go to state, your routine's completely messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's 8-man or it's 11-man.
Doesn't matter, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
If you're 8-man, it's really messed up because the first game's in the morning.
Yes. And you don't complain
late
about
morning,
that.
But it's still in the morning.
You deal with it, right? Now, to me, there's pros and cons to, you know, changing a game from Friday to Thursday. One of the pros is that you have an extra day to rest and get prepared for your second round game, which should be harder than your first.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cons would be that you have one less day to prepare, but guess what? Your opponent's in the same boat. There's no advantage there. Now, you move it from Friday to Thursday, there's no advantage for either team. That's it. In fact, the advantage would be the home team.
Yeah.
So Nemaha Central moved their game from Friday to Thursday so that they can all go down and attend and support the volleyball team, and I commend Nemaha Central for doing that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and Smith Center's always
tried to do that.
And you know, I think this is the first time I've ever heard of anybody kind of
challenging,
saying no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, for Smith Center, it's a situation where technically you can get back because you're in the morning session and early afternoon. You probably can get back to Smith Center, but more of the issue for that is I don't want to drive back to Dodge City the next day for the semis and finals. And so you try to avoid that no matter what. Even if you can get back in time to watch a football game, we're here. We'd kind of rather just stay here.
Well, yeah, it's not ideal to a Friday morning at Dodge City, drive all the way back Friday night for a football, then get up really early or leave right back Friday night to get back for a 9 a.m. semifinal.
Yeah.
So it still makes sense to have the football game Thursday night, and then you have all of Friday to enjoy volleyball, stay down there in Dodge City or Hutch, or wherever you are, Emporia, and then you can relax. You hopefully got a hotel room, and you're ready to go for Saturday morning. Or, you know, if you got to wait till Saturday afternoon, that's cool, too. You got plenty of time. That would be the best situation, but it's not easy. It's a good problem to have if you have your football and volleyball team into state. And I just think it's really, you know, I think it's important that you get as much support at state, no matter what the sport is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can get people to go watch state cross country, the more the better. If you get people to go to state wrestling, state basketball, state volleyball, state football, I mean, the more the better. The more the better.
Absolutely. You want to have everybody you can at your disposal to help cheer you on and give you some kind of advantage down there, too, to have that crowd behind you.
It does help. There's no doubt about it. Beloit had the bigger crowd at Minneapolis, a close trip. It helped. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt it helps. You go to Hutchinson, there's a bigger arena. So, you know, if one town has twice as many fans compared to the other because they made some adjustments, that will that make a difference? It could. I'm not saying it should, but it could. I mean, kids feed off the energy of the crowd. That's why home field and home court advantage is so important to everybody. You feed off the crowd. You feed off that energy. Sometimes it can boost you when you're struggling and you're down. We've seen this happen to KU basketball a ton over the years at Allen Fieldhouse. We've seen it happen with the Chiefs. And so home court, home field advantage is great. You go to a neutral site, you want to get as many people there to support your school. You know, wear your school colors proudly and cheer on your team. And if you can't make it, then you can listen to us on the radio. Or you can pay a fee to watch video streaming from another entity that will not be nearly as good, that will charge you money, and in some cases might not even have a play-by-play announcer, and will have a wide shot of the floor, and you won't even be able to tell who made the hit for the kill. So those are your options. One, go, which is number one. Go. If you can, go. Support these teams. Two, I would suggest your second option should be listening to us. Because three, you don't have to pay to listen to us.
Yeah,
we're free. We're radio. We're free. We're free. The coverage is possible and free all year long with our video stream because of the sponsors. And it's free all year long in regards to radio because it's free to access it. But for us to put it on the air, we have to have sponsorship support. And the sponsors are the ones that you need to be thanking. Not even necessarily us. Thank the sponsors because they allow you to have sports on the radio. And radio is free. But if there's no sponsorship support, then the games aren't on. We just have music. And the other thing is, when it comes to your live video streaming that we do, that's free because of our sponsors. So keep that in mind. But when you go to state, we're not allowed to stream, which stinks, but it is part of what it is. I get it. But I think there's no doubt that when you get state competition, if you're going to charge people to watch, you better put together a hell of a lot better product than they did last year, because it was a joke. It was an absolute freaking joke. Yeah. And I'm going to say it as strong as I can without really messing up. It was a complete and utter joke.
If we were on satellite radio, we'd say
I would
some
let it fly because it's a joke. Friday last year, I went back and looked. Friday video stream at state that they did, they didn't even have a play-by-play announcer on Friday. There was no play-by-play at all for the state pool play on Friday. Saturday, they had an announcer who, of course, didn't know the teams that well, but at least they had an announcer, and they had a quirky shot of the court. So, anywho, maybe save yourself the money and listen for free on the radio. Or spend the money and go down and attend and watch it yourself. Then you'll be able to tell who's making the spikes and the hits and everything, because you might not be even tell when you pay for a subscription to watch a video stream. And there's no doubt, I'll say this, I can say it with uttermost confidence, that we would put together one heck of a better product if we were allowed to stream at state. We're not. It's Keisha's prerogative to have all the postseason stuff that they want with their contract with that particular entity. I get it. I understand it. That's their right to do that, and I'm fine with it. But let's step up to the plate then. If we're going to charge people money, let's bring a better product, especially at state. Like, I understand if it's not the best product during the regular season. But you get the state. Step up the game, man. All the players do. All the kids do. All the coaches do. And the parents have to pay more money than at the game or for the stream. Well, then step up your game. Present a state tournament caliber stream. Fans should demand it. You should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, you should demand it. If you're not happy with what takes place, if there's no announcing on the stream that you pay for at state, you should let Keisha know. You should. Don't come to me. I can't do nothing.
Yeah.
Go to Keisha and let them know. Because you deserve the best if you're going to, one, pay for it, and it is a state competition. You deserve a solid product, all right? Not a product that's just there.
Nah, I mean, you put together a first-rate product on the court, you should have a third-rate product on the video.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
We know these teams, and even, you know, Smith Center has a video crew that goes to all their road games, does everything, puts the product together, knows everything about the team, right? And, you know, he can't go either, right? And so it is. I could go a long discussion on this, and they want to say it's about the kids and things like that. And when you do this, it's not, because these kids have put in an effort, like I said, to have a first-rate product on the court, on the field, on the in whatever they're doing in high school sports, to get to the ultimate level of state competition.
Yeah.
And you're going to do something that pans out. You can't see anybody on the court half the time. You don't know who's hitting. You don't have anybody announcing to tell you who's doing what on that full Friday. Because I remember watching it last year when I was in breaks.
And you charge people for it.
And I could tell there was nothing on there. And then you're charging people, and then, you know, and then again, half the time, there's 1 year the product didn't work for the Osborne boys at State. It was last year. Mm-hmm. Product didn't work. Nobody could get on and watch it.
The first day of state basketball last year, everything crashed for them, and they didn't have streaming the first day of all those basketball games across the state.
Yeah.
Did they give everybody refunds? Because they should have.
No. And it's,
I guarantee they didn't.
You know, and that's when you have a nationwide thing like that, that's going to cause some issues, and
yes,
it's going to hurt Kansas, and it's not helping your kids. It's not good for your product. And and so, yeah, I mean, we obviously have stronger opinions on that. If you want to talk with us personally.
Sure. We'll let it
but,
fly.
But, yeah, it is. These kids have done everything that they can to get to where they're at, and they deserve the best product. And that's why we're going to study these teams, and you know, for us, for Bullitt and Smith Center, we know pretty much everything we need to know already, but there's a couple of new players for me that I need to make sure I have all the info on for Smith Center that have stepped into bigger roles, or they're freshmen and playing and now part of the team, and so you learn that, but we learn it, right? And we understand who this team is, and we understand their history of what they're doing at State. See, you can have a capsule that says Smith Center made it 9 out of 10 years to State, but do you research that? Do you actually go and look and see, you know, who did they beat? Where did they finish? Why did they not win State that year? Mm-hmm. Who was at that State tournament and caused them problems and things like that? Now, those people are just going to look at a capsule, even the people that are doing the play-by-play on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're going to know what you need to know about these teams, obviously. And that's why we do local.
That's right.
That's why we're here.
That's right. So me and Dusty and Jason will do our best to give you the best product that you can get. And by the way, it's free to listen to.
Yes.
So that'll be coming up on Friday. All right, the Chiefs. Wow, what an important performance yesterday against the Niners after a slow start.
Chiefs have third down and six at the San Francisco 45, leading 37-23. They load up the left side. Kelce is in a tight slot that same way. Time to throw over the middle. Juju Smith-Schuster wide open, 25-20. Jukes the safety. 10 gets a block. Angling near side pylon. Touchdown, Kansas City. It is yards after catch all day long. A 45-yard touchdown reception by Juju Smith-Schuster.
Chiefs, 529 yards of total offense against one of the best defenses in the league. And they did this against the Buccaneers a few weeks back. 44 points. Chiefs win 44-23. Started out really poorly. They're down 10-0. Mahomes threw a pick on the first possession. Chiefs rush defense wasn't good. And the Chiefs then recovered. And then a wild ending to the first half. The Chiefs were up 14-13. They made a great decision to get a false start on the Niners, moving their defensive front. So the Niners end up punting. And I actually told my oldest, we were watching it, and I said, yeah, that was unbelievable call by Dave Tobe and for the team to do what they did. That was pretty amazing stuff to force them to punt. I said, now watch Sky muff it. I said that before the punt, and that's exactly what he did. Niners get the ball. I'm like, oh, God. Well, Niners are going to be up going in the halftime, and then Chiefs at least will get the ball to start the second half. And then Garoppolo inexplicably throws the ball up for grabs on a blitz. It's picked off. So now the Chiefs have the ball. Then they go all the way down the field. They have a touchdown negated by a baloney call by the official. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even close to being right. They had been doing that earlier in the game. They didn't call it. They called on the touchdown pass, so that's negated. Then Butker misses a 39-yarder. It was a chip shot for him. So you go into halftime, and you think, okay, the Chiefs are deflated. But the Chiefs get the ball to start the second half. They score in a minute and a half. Pacheco will get run back. Hilaire with a 16-yard run. By the way, Pacheco started yesterday and didn't really change much. I mean,
no.
it's just a different change of the rotation with running backs. Pacheco had 8 carries for 43 yards. The Chiefs didn't run the ball a ton yesterday because they just don't. But they didn't have to yesterday against the 49ers, and the Chiefs eventually pull away. The key part of this game to me was, you know, it's 28-23. Garoppolo hits Kittle for a touchdown, and then the Chiefs go right down the field. They had a 3rd and 11, and they hit Scantling for 57 yards. And I can pull up the text, and I can show you this as well. And I'm not Nostradamus here, but it was crazy yesterday. So my friend Cody and I are texting back a little bit during the game, and I try only to do it during commercial breaks so I don't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, man, he goes, I know that they try to take away the deep ball, but I'd like to see us take a shot every once in a while. And I said, you know, I'm surprised that Mahomes hasn't just thrown one up to 6'5" Scantling, who can run a 4.37 40. Just, you know, throw it up and see if he can do it. So maybe he's just not comfortable with Scantling to do that. 2 minutes later, boom, Scantling's wide open, 57-yard catch, and he sends me a deal and he goes, emoji happy face, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, yeah, there it was. We were just talking about the deep ball. And they get the deep ball. And then Schuster's wide open, of course, for a touchdown later. But that was the big play of the game. It was 3rd and 11. And they get a 57-yarder. Remember the Super Bowl? 3rd and 15. Got the big play on Wasp with Tyreek Hill. It was like deja vu all over again for the 49ers. I still think the 49ers are going to be right there at the end of the season. I think the Niners are going to be in the NFC title game. I do. I think they are that good. It's just that they got a lot of injuries. And the first 2 weeks were messed up because their quarterback got hurt. And then Garoppolo, who they didn't even want back. I think it'd be crazy and funny if Garoppolo leads the Niners to a Super Bowl, to the Super Bowl, and then lose to the Chiefs in a rematch would be perfect for me. Because everybody wrote him off. And he played well at times, but he wasn't very mobile. And that's something that the Chiefs love. The Chiefs' defense is outstanding against quarterbacks that don't move very well. Have you noticed that? They're great against those. It's the guys that scramble and can break a tackle like Josh Allen, and of course, other guys too. And the Chiefs have problems, as do many defenses. But the Chiefs yesterday, here's the thing that encouraged me. And keep in mind, the Chiefs, when they lost to the Colts, they bounced right back and lit up the Buccaneers defense for 41 points and looked awesome. They lose to the Bills, and they come back looking unbelievable, unstoppable. Yesterday against San Francisco. What I like about this team, and this is why I've said that we don't need OBJ. Please stop with the OBJ stuff. I mean, if he wants to come on and the Chiefs think they need him, fine. But we don't need OBJ. I've been preaching this for a couple weeks. We don't need him. We need a pass rusher. We need a pass rusher. And that I think if the Chiefs just simply get a really good or great pass rusher, which I highlighted out was going to happen this year, then to me, they're the favorite over the Bills. But until they get that, the Bills to me are still the slight favorite. But what I've said about the Chiefs' offense is it should only get better. It should only get better. If you start having Pacheco carry the ball a little bit more, I think that makes him a little bit better. That might really light a spark under the saddle of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That might make him better. Okay, I like the competition. McKinnon, Helaire, and Pacheco all fighting for 10 carries. Because Andy's not going to run the ball a ton. Finally threw a screen pass. What do you know? Been screaming for that for 3 weeks. They used to throw the screens all the time with Alex Smith. Then Mahomes, apparently we can't throw screens. 3rd and 20, and you pick up 35. Like, hello, you've got these maulers like Joe Tooney, Trey Smith, Orlando Brown, out front leading the pack, along with Creed Humphrey. Dude, screen passes, I don't know why they don't throw them a little more often. That was brilliant, and they've got the right guy to catch it. But McKinnon is the best cutback runner on this team. He's got the best vision of anybody on the team of the running backs. So I love that. So that was cool. And so this offense will continue to evolve. But what I've been saying is if this offense is really going to be good, and statistically it was really good before yesterday. People kind of forget this. Well, they don't have Tyreek Hill. They're not quite as good. No, statistically they're better. In fact, they have more longer plays from scrimmage in the passing game this year than they did last year with Tyreek Hill. Did people know that? They added a few yesterday. But the thing I've been saying is Juju is on the same page with Mahomes, and I am impressed by it. It looks like Juju and Mahomes have played together for 4 years. It's fantastic. I love to see it. Kelsey's always on the same page with Mahomes, so we know that. But the two wild cards for the Chiefs, and we talked about it last week, Scantling didn't have a single catch last week against Buffalo. Was not involved. All right? Hardman, like, where's he been? He's had one decent game against the Raiders. He's up and down. He had a heel injury. I get it. What's encouraging to me about yesterday is that Mecole Hardman, they put him in situations to be successful. One little toss forward that was basically a jet sweep, which is a touchdown pass from Mahomes. Then two literal handoffs, which made my oldest upset because he has Mahomes on his fantasy and he wanted the little toss ahead to be a touchdown pass instead of a handoff for a run. And Hardman might be the best running back the Chiefs have. I mean, in regards to reading the holes for the most part and following his blockers and being patient, he also had a touchdown reception in the game yesterday, which was that little toss forward. So Hardman had 3 touchdowns. They put him in situations where he can excel. And maybe part of that is he's getting healthier. That heel, if you're a fast guy, a foot injury, that hurts you a lot. And then Scantling, getting him involved, 3 catches, 111 yards, 2 deep balls. Now, suddenly, if you're going to play man press coverage, and I thought, Greg Olsen made a very good point, the color commentator on Fox yesterday for the game. He said, Teams are playing more man-to-man in zone because there is no Tyreek Hill. If the Chiefs can win at the line of scrimmage on press coverage, then teams are going to get out of man-to-man. You go to zone, and Mahomes is going to pick you apart. Now, I disagree with that a little bit. The Bengals were in rush three and were in zone last year and dropped eight, and the Chiefs didn't pick it apart. They should have. They didn't. They should have ran the ball more. They didn't. So I don't know if I fully agree with it. If Mahomes stays under control, yes, he should pick it apart. Yesterday, they won in man-to-man situations yesterday. And I'll tell you the other thing that doesn't get enough credit. This offensive line has been up and down. And this offensive line has looked unbelievably not so good against the Colts. Unbelievably great against Tampa Bay. Not good in the second half against Buffalo last week when they couldn't even defend three men rushing and they had five offensive linemen when it was crunch time. And then yesterday against San Francisco, one of the best defenses in the league, they were unbelievably good. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know why. I don't know if it's just about matchups or what. I mean, Bosa is a stud on the end. Wiley did way better than he did against Von Miller. Now, Von Miller's going to be a Hall of Famer. Bosa, I don't know if he's going to be or not. Niners had some of their defensive players back that I thought weren't going to play. So it wasn't like the Niners were completely bare in the cupboard defensively. But when I look at the Chiefs football team and I see the offensive line play like they did, Mahomes had all day to throw, almost all day. Listen, Mahomes has all day to throw. This team's going to the Super Bowl, and this team's going to win the Super Bowl. And so I keep coming back to two things. And a lot of people, old school, will say it starts in the trenches. And I say, well, sometimes a quarterback can cover up your deficiencies on the offensive line. I thought Mahomes did it when they won the Super Bowl. Their offensive line wasn't unbelievably great. They had a guy they picked up off the street that played guard. Okay? He's no Pro Bowler, but they were serviceable. They were a solid offensive line, but they weren't nothing special. But Mahomes was able to make some plays when there was pressure, right? He preserves sacks that other quarterbacks will take, like a Tom Brady or a Jimmy Garoppolo. Mahomes is going to avoid those sacks, throw the ball away, or even make a play, as we know. So when I look at the Chiefs, to me, it all starts two spots. If the Chiefs can get a pass rush without blitzing, which they really can't, but if they can, that makes them a whole different team. And if the offensive line, you're going to have to hurry, you're going to miss it. And he ain't going to get there. The offensive line, when it plays well, when the offensive line plays well, this team offensively is unstoppable.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at it. Tampa Bay, unstoppable. 49ers, unstoppable. That's two of the best defenses in the league. Didn't play well against Buffalo, scored 20 points. Didn't play well against Indianapolis, scored 17 points. The offensive line, you can talk about all the keys. You can talk about, well, we got to get Hardman involved. We got to get Juju involved. We've got to, you know, we got to get the ball to Kelsey more often, or we got to get the ball to MVS. We got to set up more screens, and we got to run the ball more. When Mahomes has got to be more accurate. That's all true. But without protection offensive line, none of that stuff happens. In the offensive line, yes, they should get a game ball because the Niners are one of the best defenses in the league. They were super against the Buccaneers. I mean, if you can do this against the Buccaneers, and both these games are on the road with crowd noise and everything. The crowd was going nuts, 3rd and 11, when the Chiefs only have 5, and they convert a 57-yard pass against the former Chief, Charvarius Ward, which made that kind of sweet.
Yeah.
The offensive line is the key to this Chiefs team's offense being lights out. In previous years, and Max might be listening going, I've told you, Wade, all these years, the offensive line, the team's different. In the past, you could just throw one up to Tyreek Hill. You could beat the defense, and you might have pressure in your face. Now, you don't have that luxury of Tyreek Hill anymore. So now you got to need a little more time to find your receivers, and you're learning how to work with them, the new ones you acquired in the offseason, and now you give Mahomes time to throw. You know, when Mahomes is able to sit there and not go backwards, and sometimes he goes backwards when he doesn't have to, and Mahomes does it every game. There's at least one play where he just goes backwards and rolls out and throws the ball away when he should just step up. Yeah, he does that. Yeah. He still feels it a little bit. Yesterday, he did a wonderful job. Trust his offensive line, and he should. The offensive line was tremendous, and he stepped up, and he didn't have a lot of pressure. He wasn't even touched in the first half. And see what happens. And if you bring a blitz against the Chiefs, you're usually going to get burned. So the key to beating the Chiefs is simple. I mean, it really is simple. I know everybody makes it complicated. The key to beating the Chiefs is very simple. You have to get pressure on Mahomes with your front four, or in the case of the Bills, 3, and a Hall of Famer, Von Miller. That's the key. If you get pressure on any quarterback, and Mahomes, the Chiefs can still win even though he gets pressured a lot. But for you to have a chance to beat the Chiefs and slow down their offense, the only way you're going to do it is by getting a pass rush without blitzing. And the Bills were able to do that. The Colts were able to do that some. And the Niners, I thought, would be able to. And I thought the Bucs would be able to. And I have to ask the offensive line, why were you so good in these two games, but then not so good in some of these other games? And I know it's about matchups. The Bills know the Chiefs probably better than a lot of teams do because they played a lot the last few years.
So is Von Miller,
right? And Von Miller knows. I mean, you don't have to play Mitchell Schwartz because Mitchell Schwartz actually owned Von Miller. But Mitchell Schwartz, he obviously retired with a back injury. So I'm encouraged by what I saw. Juju had 7 catches, 124, 45-yard touchdown reception. Hardman, 3 touchdowns, 2 TD runs, a TD reception. They had big days. Kelsey still had 6 catches and 98. The defense was solid. 5 sacks, 2 picks against the immobile quarterback. You play against a great quarterback, they don't get those numbers. You know that. Willie Gay returned. I like to have him on the field. They are one pass rusher away from being probably the favorite in the AFC, in my opinion. But they won't get that guy until maybe next year's draft or free agency or whatever. They get a bye week, so they can heal up a little bit, although they don't have a ton of injuries. McDuffie will be back after the bye, so now Josh Williams and Jalen Watson, who really have got some valuable experience. You know, Josh Williams had his first pick of his career yesterday. You know, now he can be a guy who can step in if you need to go to, you know, the nickel, the dime package, or you have an injury. He at least got some experience. And I'll tell you what, Jalen Watson is a seventh-round draft pick. And Josh Williams is a fourth-round draft pick, but they both are tall and lanky. The Chiefs don't have those small, short corners, although McDuffie is. He's 5'11". But Seren tells me McDuffie's the real deal. He looked good in preseason, looked really good first half against Arizona. Now, that makes the Chiefs' defense better, doesn't it? Especially if you don't get much of a pass rush, you need some really good cover corners. The only negative I can take out of this game yesterday, there's only one. The rush defense early wasn't great, but I can live with it. Niners love to run the ball. I get it. You're not going to win in this league by running the ball 40 times. It just ain't going to happen anymore. You need to run it probably more than the Chiefs do, maybe, but you don't need to run it 40 times. The Chiefs, Sky Moore has to stop returning punts. And Moore, they say he has the best hands out of the draft. Well, not returning punts. He didn't return punts in college. So yes. Why are we making him a punt? I'm like, I understand if he returned punts in college and he was good at it. I totally get it.
Yeah,
but he's had two major mistakes. One that I would say didn't cost him the game, but certainly set the tone against the Colts. And this one yesterday, he should be going and thanking the defense and Spagnuolo for blitzing and getting an interception because they bailed his butt out. And I just don't know of a team that has got Super Bowl aspirations can go with a rookie. And they got a rookie kick returner in Pacheco who should have let a ball go out of bounds. For some reason, fielded at the 5 and was lucky to stay in bounds. That was a dumb decision. But he's a rookie. He's learning. And then Sky Moore's made 2 really bad. And there's another time he muffed one, and luckily they recovered it. So he's muffed 3.
Mm-hmm.
When you got the smallest room for margin of error between the Chiefs and the Bills, possibly, and if you're going to go to Buffalo, assuming the Bills get the home field, you can't have a mistake like this. You either got to put Hardman back there, who's muffed a few before in his career, but you got to go with the guy you feel better with returning punts. And I wonder if the Sky Moore punt return experiment ended yesterday. That's the only negative I got out of the whole thing.
Yeah, you hope it did, but I obviously they're going with a guy that's athletic and that can make plays because they want somebody like that back there to return punts. But if you don't understand the intricacies of returning a punt, then that takes your athleticism and your ability out of it.
Yes.
Like if you're muffing punts, it doesn't matter how fast you are, how shifty you are, how agile you are, no matter what. If you're muffing the punt, you don't get the return, and it doesn't matter. So apparently he did some decent things in training camp for them to trust him in that position. And I know you don't – they started doing this with Tyreek Hill as it went on and on, is that they didn't want him returning punts because he was too important to their offense, basically. And so if you get to that point, like with Mecole Hardman, like you feel like he's had the heel injury, so he wasn't going to return punts early in the season anyway. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like he's more comfortable now and can do that, I would switch to him because he has history of doing it. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he's muffed some, but at least he understands the concepts and what he needs to do in the situation and has had at least some success doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have not seen that with Sky Moore. Like, he's not even breaking big punt returns when he does it the right way, right? No. And so that and part of that is your coverage unit too and how they're going to block for you and things like that, but or your return unit. And so that's part of it, but it's just not good. Like, you cannot be giving up field position week in and week out like that.
One thing that's encouraging is I asked last week, can you name one really good return in special teams? When we got it yesterday, Pacheco 49-yarder. That was huge in the second half. Pacheco has that ability. If he starts to learn how to read the holes right, you know, I think there is a potential there for him. Whereas Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, once again yesterday, he had a 16-yard run. Of course, it was as wide as a truck to run through. I would hope he'd hit that hole. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire yesterday, there was one play where, I mean, my God, all you need is one jump cut back to the Niners' run game is predicated on cutback lanes.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs' offensive line creates a lot of cutback lanes, and Helaire never takes them. He had another one yesterday. And there's a still shot of the play where he runs straight into a pile of humanity like he usually does, and all he has to do is take a little mini jump cut. He doesn't have to take a gigantic jump cut. He's going to get at least five, if not a ton more, just by looking, seeing out his peripheral, oh my, I've got a hole here. Let's read the hole. Oh, no, I'm a robot. The play is supposed to go here. I run right into my left guard, and I get tackled for no gain. That's not good running at all. I mean, the great running backs have the vision to make plays when there's nothing there.
And they can slow down the game in their head, too, and I think that's a big part of it.
I don't think
Clyde could slow it down and read what's going on.
Apparently
I think he just
not.
Gets the ball and this is where the play is supposed to go, and I don't have time to read that, so I'm just going to try to get what I can.
Yeah, McKinnon's the best at reading the hole.
Uh-huh.
And then Pacheco had a couple where he did a good job, a little cutbacks yesterday. He's got the most potential. There's no doubt about that. But in regards to the punt, and I will say that the Chiefs special teams coverage units have gotten better, and I expect them to get better because they got a lot of young guys that they have and some rookies on that unit. And then Marcus Kemp was elevated practice squad, made a heck of a play. Brian Cook is a very good special teams player as a rookie. They're making plays now in coverage, so that's getting better. But the one thing to nitpick on is punt return. And I don't even care if they don't get anything out of the punt return game. Just quit fumbling the ball on the punt return. And by the way, when you're inside the 10, you should get the hell out of there, because the Chiefs offense, even here's the thing that cracks me up. The Chiefs' offense is so good that even if they get it on the 2, we're fine. Like, let's not freak out because they down the ball at the 3 or the 1 even. I mean, yeah, you got to be a little more conservative. You don't want that. You know what's worse? Fumbling the ball at the 9! And your offense never goes on the field. Stand at the 10. And if that ball is anywhere to where you can't catch it, get out of the way. It was like Sky Moore was about to let it go, and I'm going to suddenly catch it. As soon as you, if you hesitate, you're dead. We've told our kids this all the years in baseball. When you go to steal, if you're going to steal, steal. When you hesitate, you're dead. If you're going to steal, go. If you get thrown out, I can live with you being thrown out because you went hard and you tried to steal a base. But when you hesitate and then decide to go, that's when you're dead. That's when we're going to get mad. If we send you, go. Don't hesitate. That's when bad things happen. Same thing in football. You hesitate, especially in trying to field a punt. As soon as you hesitate, you need to say, oh, dude, I don't got this. I got to get away from it. You know what? They might down it at the 1. But I'd rather have the ball at the 1 than give it to the Niners at the 9. Mm-hmm. And that's twice that Sky Moore's done it. He got bailed out yesterday. And it will be interesting to see how the Chiefs handle that going forward. Mecole Hardman, big day with the jet sweeps. Andy Reid talks about that.
Well, Coach Heck had these jet sweeps dialed up, and really he liked them. I mean, he did like them against this group, but he normally likes them. So I thought Mecole did a heck of a job going fast, being patient, and then hitting it. And, you know, our guys blocked it well. So, yeah, for him, yeah, I think he had 3 touchdowns on it. That was the same play, really, 3 different times.
Here's Mahomes' take on that.
First off, jet sweeps work better when you run the ball well. I thought we ran it in spots really well, run it downhill. And then when you get other guys like Travis and stuff going through the middle, sometimes they lose sight of that jet sweep guy. And I think what makes Mecole so good at it is obviously he's super fast, but he runs really hard. And a lot of times when you get smaller receivers and you get them on those jet sweeps, they want to get outside and kind of get to the sideline and kind of get yards and go out of bounds. If you notice with Mecole, that man puts his foot in the ground and gets upfield and trusts his blockers. And you don't see that out of a lot of guys in this league, and it's a special talent that he has.
Once again, Mahomes and the Chiefs rallied from a 10-point deficit. 10-0. Mahomes' winning percentage down 10 or more in games is insane.
It's the third best in, I don't know if it was the history or active quarterbacks, just when he's down 10, like his winning percentage since 2019 is what it is.
Yeah, it's fourth in the NFL.
It's number one since 2019, his winning percentage.
Well, yeah, his overall winning percentage.
Yeah.
When he's down 10 or more, he's got the fourth best winning percentage.
Was it fourth?
Right ahead of Brady.
Yeah.
And that's Brady with everything, not being down 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. Mahomes said his team would be ready, and they were.
Whenever you play against the best teams in the league, you want to go out there and show what you're all about. And I believe the 49ers are one of the best teams in the league, and obviously one of the best defenses. And so for us, coming off a loss against the Bills, you don't want to go out, have two losses going into the bye week. And so we knew this was an extremely important game. And I thought the guys accepted the challenge, especially how we started and responded and went out there and found a way to get that win. And that bye week's a lot better when you're coming off a win.
Yes, it absolutely is. Chiefs will have next week off. Then they'll host the Titans on Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs get the WSD against the 49ers, 44-23. And I agree with Mahomes. I think the Niners are going to be just fine. I mean, you look at the NFC right now. I mean, the Niners still have a shot, no doubt. And let's go through what happened yesterday. The Ravens outlast the Browns 23-20. Panthers beat the Buccaneers 21-3. Tampa Bay's, they had a wide-open touchdown pass. Mike Evans bobbled and dropped, and that set the tone. Brady's not playing great. The Buccaneers aren't playing great. They're 3-4. Here's a crazy stat for you. If the Panthers beat the Falcons next week, which is possible, and the Buccaneers lose at Baltimore, which is very possible, you know who leads the division? The Panthers. And they just fired the coach and traded Christian McCaffrey to the Niners. And by the way, McCaffrey looked pretty good in his limited time with the Niners yesterday. The Bengals beat the Falcons 35-17. Joe Burrow with his best game of the year. Cowboys get Dak Prescott back. Wasn't super sexy, but they won 24-6 over the Lions. They're 5-2. Giants are 6-1 because they just find ways to win. 23-17 at Jacksonville. Titans beat the Colts 19-10. The Titans lead that division now. Packers lose again. They lose to Taylor Heinicke and the Commanders. 23-21 was that final. Aaron Rodgers had 43 yards passing at halftime.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers' body language isn't good. I don't think he's even the best as a leader. And, you know, Tom Brady's body language ain't good either. It's amazing how these guys have been spoiled by winning all the time. They don't know how to handle losing, apparently, which I get because you win all the time.
Yeah.
The Jets win at the Broncos 16-9. Broncos, no Russell Wilson, doesn't matter, still can't score. Raiders beat the Texans 38-20. Seahawks are first place in their division. The Seahawks are two games better than the Broncos without Russell Wilson. They're 4-3 and lead their division. The Broncos are last in their division with Russell Wilson. Seahawks beat the Chargers 37-23. You talk about a team that drafted well. Every single guy the Seahawks drafted has been outstanding for them this year, including a running back yesterday that ran for 168 yards. Chiefs beat the 49ers 44-23. Steelers lose to the Dolphins 16-10 on Sunday Night Football tonight. Patriots hosting the Bears for Monday Night Football as Bill Belichick go for win 325, which will be second alone behind Don Shula for most wins. Would break a tie with George Halas, who used to be the catch of the Chicago Bears. The Seahawks are 4-3. The Rams are 3-3. The Niners are 3-4. The Cardinals are 3-4. Seahawks lead division in the NFC West. The Buccaneers are 3-4. The Packers are 3-4. Who's the team to beat in NFC?
They were talking about that on the broadcast, right? And who is it?
People will automatically say Eagles because they're undefeated. Okay, that's cool. I'm with that. But who's the second best team in NFC?
It's the Giants, but I don't think anybody even close to believes that.
And the Vikings are 5-1, and people don't want to buy into the Vikings. I think most people are going to do what I do, and that is when the Niners get healthy, fully healthy, the Niners and the Eagles are the two favorites. Mm. And the Niners are 3-4, tied for last in their division right now.
Yeah.
But I just think the Niners are the team that's got the most upside, and you add Christian McCaffrey into the equation. Whereas the Packers, I don't know what they're going to do.
I mean, elite receiver is not going to be walking in that door for them this year. So that's a huge part of it for the Packers, I think, and a part of Aaron Rodgers' body language, because he's been through this before, and he's just frustrated that he doesn't have guys to throw the ball
to.
And that's just kind of been the case. I mean, he's had, you know, Jordy and Cobb on the same team, and you know, obviously with Devontae Adams breaking free and being outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Alan Lazard is their number one receiver, and it's like, how are you going to win games like that? And now it's getting worse because you can see frustration with Rodgers.
And the Buccaneers with Brady, they're an older team.
Uh-huh.
They're just older, and if they're not healthy, and they do have a lot of injuries, but now offensively they can't do much. And so I am enjoying this quite a bit, to be honest. I'm enjoying the struggles of the Bucs and the Packers, especially the Bucs. But I think which team do you think has the better chance of riding the ship and being good by the end of the year? The Packers or the
Bucs? Based on what they have on defense, I'd say Tampa Bay.
I agree with you.
Because Green Bay doesn't have that either. I mean, they're better defensively at times this year, but they don't have the kind of star power or the physicality even that Tampa Bay is going to bring and the rush that they can bring on the edge at times.
I agree with you.
So, I don't think the Packers are going to write this at all, which is a shame because I keep picking them every year to go to the Super Bowl. Maybe I should stop that.
Yeah, you probably should. Jets are 5-2, and the Giants are 6-1. Helps cover up the horrible Yankee disaster that took place the last few days. I'm sorry, I had to get
that
in.
Nobody's buying into either one of those teams yet.
No. But it goes to show you, and I was talking to my kids about this, every year in the NFL, somebody that wasn't very good the year before ends up being good and makes a run.
Yeah.
Whereas in baseball, you don't see it very often. And the NBA, you don't see it very often. But the NFL, this is why it's the best league in professional sports. Because I remember the Rams were 4-12, I think it was. Next year won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. We saw the Chiefs go from 2-14 to getting a new coach, bringing in Alex Smith, and starting the year 9-0. The Jaguars were horrible last year. They got off to a decent start this year. The Jets and the Giants, nobody said they'd have a chance. A lot of people, including myself, thought the Seahawks would be one of the worst teams in the league. Mm-hmm. They lead the NFC West through 7 games. And then you got the teams you think are, well, they're going to be great, are 3-4. Losing records.
Playoffs usually turn over about 50%. You know, about half the teams make it one year, don't make it the next.
And I think that's good for the sport. As long as the Chiefs are in it every year, I really don't care about anything else. But that is a good thing for the sport. MIAA football, Pittsburgh State beat Missouri Western 28-16. The Gorillas are undefeated. They're going to move up to D1 here soon. funny. Fort Hays State 27-14 over Central Missouri. Washburn destroyed Central Oklahoma 37-9. Fort Hays State getting a win. They had a losing streak there. Northwest Missouri State won 36-3 over Northeastern State. Emporia State beat Missouri Southern 24-21. That's a look at the MIAA. College football over the weekend. The Jayhawks... well, they've lost 3 in a row. I have to admit, I'm listening, going down to Minneapolis Substate Volleyball. They're down 28-3 at halftime. I'm like, oh, goodness gracious, here we go. This is the first big blowout of the year. Then Kyle Beisner, who's a KU fan, AD at Beloit, says, you see KU, they cut it to 5. I'm like, what? 28-23. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Fair Bean call. Looking his way. Now he's flushed to the left. Bean, can he just keep it himself? He sprints to the end zone. He's in. Touchdown, Kansas. Jason Bean from 4 yards out into the end zone for 6. And your Jayhawks putting a scare into the Bears.
But that scare would not last. Baylor led 28-3 at halftime. And once again, KU, a familiar situation. They go on the road and they get down double digits. Now, they pulled one out against Houston. They pulled one out against West Virginia. They couldn't do it at Oklahoma. They couldn't do it against Baylor on Saturday. That's not a good recipe to get down big in the first half. But I will give credit to KU. In the past, they would have folded like a cheap tent, and it would have been over, and they would have lost this game in previous years. They would have lost this game to Baylor 55-10. Instead, they come back. They end up losing 35-23. Baylor scores a touchdown with 2:37 remaining. Baylor had 437 yards of offense. Bean finished with 232 and a touchdown. He did not play well first half, played much better the second half. Here's Lance Leipold, head coach of the Jayhawks. They go into a bye week, and they need it because they got a lot of injuries as well. They are 5-3. They need one more win for bowl eligibility. Coach liked the fight in his team.
Just challenge them not to worry about the scoreboard at this moment because we weren't playing as executing how we needed to, as physical as we needed to, and all things. But, you know, sometimes it just takes a first down or two or a big conversion on third down or something. And we got it, and I think we started to get some rhythm and some confidence. Now, maybe the score had something to do with that, and they're playing a little softer. But nonetheless, I thought we started to generate some of that offense that we needed.
KU 5-3 overall, 2-3 in the Big 12. Baylor improves to 4-3, 2-2 in the Big 12. K-State TCU, they are in a matchup for supremacy of the Big 12 on Saturday nights. And K-State got off to a great start.
Vaughn. Double deuce. Look out. There's no stopping him. Give him 6. Touchdown, Wildcats.
That gave K-State a 28-10 lead. The Wildcats, the story here, no doubt, injuries. Wildcats, Adrian Martinez out of the game after just 4 offensive plays. Will Howard did a wonderful job for K-State, and they scored 4 touchdowns, and he had a couple of TD passes, did Howard, to Cade Warner and Sammy Wheeler. Howard had a TD run. You heard the TD run there by Deuce Vaughn. K-State was up 28-10. To me, one of the biggest keys of this game was when TCU went on that 91-yard drive right before halftime, and then getting the ball to start the second half. That was a huge, huge deal there. And they end up coming back, and they score the final 28 points of the game. They outscore K-State 21-0 in the second half. Injury is a big part of this. Even Will Howard had to leave for a while. Jake Rubley came in and promptly threw an interception in his first pass, so obviously he's not quite ready. Daniel Green and Julius Brents left the game on the defensive side. Vaughn was limited at times on offense with his injuries, and King Felix was limited at times. And I mean, I can't even go through the entire infirmary report, because that's what it seems like with K-State. It's unfortunate, because K-State, if they stayed healthy in this game, odds are they win the game, even with Will Howard as their quarterback.
Exactly.
It's unfortunate. TCU's caught a lot of breaks this year in regards to quarterbacks they play against get hurt, whether they hit them or not. So it's disappointing for K-State, and you feel bad from that standpoint with all the injuries. But at the same time, Coach Klieman said after the game, listen, we got a deep team. We have 85 scholarship players. Injuries are part of the game, and I give him credit. He didn't make excuses.
Oh, and he won't.
And he shouldn't.
No. It's clear. A thing that I talked about early in the season before it even started is depth for K-State, because, yeah, you got all those scholarship players, but your backups are not 3-4-star or 4-5-star guys. They're you know, 3 at max, and still learning a lot of the system sometimes when they do get that chance, and can't really do everything off of raw ability like some of those top-tier schools can with their backups. So it's definitely going to have an effect on it. It's rather clear, like, the turn in the game happened when, well, what the big drive by TCU right before the first half ended, but when injuries started piling up for K-State, it's pretty clear things went south.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, oh, you're just going to blame the loss on injuries. Yeah, part of it I am, for sure. Like,
they had so many.
As a fan, I can actually use an excuse.
Yes.
Chris Klieman isn't going to do that as a coach, but I can do that as a fan and somebody that's watching the game, or even as a media person, you know, analyzing the game. Mm-hmm. You can do that, because clearly it was the story of the night for K-State, other than, you know, the fact they lost and had a 28-10 lead, but it all correlates, and it's directly responsible for part of the loss.
Absolutely. Here's Klieman on the roller coaster game for the Cats.
Tale of two halves. I thought our guys came out in the first half and played really well. We had some adversity right away, losing Adrian. It was a situation where, had it been a play, we'd have probably taken and put Rubes in, but seeing the severity of it, probably going to be out for the game. We went with Will and told Will he was going to play if that were the case. And so Will prepared really well, and was proud of Will Howard. I thought Will Howard played a really good football game and gave us a great spark in the first half to get a little bit of a lead. And then second half, it was kind of our inability to get off blocks and tackle. And TCU's a good football team. And then on offense, we just didn't capitalize. We made some plays and got in the red zone. Missed a couple field goals we got to make, which at least maybe keeps it a one-score game. And then ultimately in the end, told the guys, you know, in a game like this with two good teams, it comes down to just a handful of plays, and they made more plays in the second half than we did.
Yeah, that is true. K-State now 5-2 overall, 3-1 in the Big 12. TCU perfect at 7-0, 4-0. New top 25 has been released. Top 6 stay the same. And TCU moves up number 7. Oklahoma State now up to number 9. K-State stays in the top 25. They drop 5 spots to number 22. Other Big 12 games, Oklahoma State trailed by 2 touchdowns in the first half, came back and beat Texas 41-34. Texas Tech blasted West Virginia 48-10. And in the top 25, Clemson came back to beat Syracuse 27-21. Horrible call in that game where they called roughing the passer on Syracuse on a sidelines play. And then later, the same situation, Syracuse guy gets lit up out of bounds. Don't call it. Listen, if you're going to call roughing the passer or unsportsmanlike or personal foul on the sideline, you need to be consistent. That really did look like, we're going to make sure Clemson wins this game. Those are the calls that come back to bite officials. When one guy gets tapped out of bounds, and that's a personal foul, and then the other quarterback for Syracuse at Clemson, by the way, and he gets drilled out of bounds, and he's out of bounds, and there's no flag, you have to wonder.
Right. Yeah.
You have to wonder.
It always creeps in. Just some of the stuff that happens.
It was like, huge. That call on the roughing the passer was huge. Kept the drive alive for Clemson. They end up winning, scoring a touchdown. They won the game by 6 points. 27-21 over Syracuse at home. So, Alabama rolls to a 36 win over number 24 Mississippi State. Ole Miss lost to LSU 45-20. LSU was ranked 7th, and number 10 Oregon picked up a win over number 9 UCLA 45-30. UCLA with their first loss of the season. All right, the World Series is set. It's exactly what we thought. Well, a lot of people probably had the Astros. You know, I think a lot of us had the Astros going to the World Series. I definitely didn't have the Phillies going to the World Series. Nobody did. I did pick the Phillies to win the series against the Padres. The only reason I did that was because I thought that the Padres had won their Super Bowl, won their World Series against the Dodgers, and it looked like that. And the Phillies are just playing great ball. They're peaking at the right time. Now, keep this in mind. Prior to this year, the Phillies wouldn't have even had this opportunity. They added a wild card on each side expanded the playoffs, the Phillies had the worst record of any team in the National League that made the playoffs. They were the bottom seed at number six.
Yeah.
They went to St. Louis down 2-0 in the ninth inning of game one of the wild card series, came back to win. If they lose that game, I bet they don't even get out of that round. So they beat the Cardinals, they whipped the Braves, and then they whipped the Padres. And yesterday, the Padres were up 3-2, down 3-1. Padres up 1 in the eighth inning. Bryce Harper came to the plate.
On the seventh pitch, Harper hits one in the air, left center field, back it goes! Harper, the swing of his life! Suarez fires. Pop fly, right field, Segura's out, Castellanos on, and the Philadelphia Phillies are going to the World Series!
Phillies going to the World Series, and they're playing some great baseball right now, peaking at the right time. And they'll face the Astros. The Astros will be a heavy favorite. Astros, one of three teams in Major League Baseball history to sweep the Division Series and the Championship Series. Can you name the other two?
The Royals did it.
Yeah, right, 14 Royals did it.
I.
The other one is not that far away in the Midwest, to our west.
The Rockies?
The Rockies,
yeah,
did it. Remember that? Yeah. And they got swept by the Red Sox in the World Series. Yeah. And what's funny is both those teams got off and won the first seven games. The Royals actually won the first eight games of the playoffs because they beat the wild card to beat the A's. And both those teams lost in the World Series. So that means that the Phillies are going to be your World Series champions. But the Astros, man, just their pitching is outstanding. They get some timely hitting. And the Yankees struck out over 50 times in this series. And Aaron Judge didn't do anything in the series at all. And it was probably appropriate that he's the one that, you know, hit a soft tapper to the mound that ended up being the end for the Yankees.
One ball, two strikes. Judge on the ground. Presley's got it. Easy flip. Ball game over. And the Houston Astros win the American League pennant. The Astros are going back to the World Series.
So I think everybody in the world except Astro fans are going to be cheering for the Phillies to win, okay? And Bryce Harper, how about him? NLCS MVP, 8 of 20, 3 doubles, 2 homers, 5 RBIs in series, and rookie Jeremy Pena, well, a shortstop for the Astros, was the MVP of the ALCS as the Astros were down 5-4. Yankees made a couple of errors, one in each of the last two games at home, and cost them dearly. And that's the difference, man. Mm-hmm. The Astros are solid defensive. They're a complete team. You make one little error. You drop a fly ball. You make a bad transition on a double play ball like they did yesterday. And next thing you know, the team takes advantage of it, the other team. And that's exactly what the Astros did. They made the Yankees pay for every little mistake they made. And once again, the Astros are the Yankees' kryptonite. The Yankees can't beat the Astros in the playoffs. They just can't. And they couldn't do it again this year. They couldn't even win a darn game.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a downright shame.
But that's what's bad about it is, like, it's the Astros. Like, you can't, like,
it's
always fun to see the Yankees especially get swept.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's not fun when it's Houston.
I still enjoyed it, though.
There's a part of you that is going to enjoy it for sure.
I enjoyed it. Now, I'm chilling for the Phillies to win now.
Yes.
I think we all enjoy when the Yankees
get it. It's nice to see Bryce Harper get a spotlight here. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he's had some really good years, but sometimes he only gets to play 120 or so games because he'll get injured along the way and he doesn't finish, you know, top of the MVP races or anything like that. So it'll be nice to see him get a little spotlight as one of the better players in baseball.
Yeah, and the reason he gets hurt is he plays so hard.
Yep.
You know, George Brett always played super hard, and it cost him longevity. Ken Griffey Jr. did too. They missed games because they got hurt, but they played the game so hard. Now, you never got cheated when you went to watch those guys play. And I think of Bryce Harper, you don't get cheated either. But you go watch a lot of guys play, and you do get cheated.
Yeah, for sure.
No doubt. So, and by the way, I have to admit, the NBA has been fun watching Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook heave up three-pointers and not even hit the rim.
Man.
The other day, did you see this? The Lakers, 102-101. They're up 1, 35 seconds to go, up 1 in L.A. LeBron's just walking up the floor behind everybody because Russell has the ball into the front court. So they can easily run the clock down to about 12, 15 seconds, you know, milk some clock. They're up 1. Russell comes down, and he has an open shot. I will give him that, but you got to know your situation. He's not a rookie. He pulls up from 15 feet, and nobody even tries to defend him. He misses off the heel, rebound to Portland, and LeBron's got his hands out going, what are you doing? Okay, and then there's another one where Anthony Davis, everybody thinks Anthony Davis is this really good outside shooter. He's not. He's not a good percentage shooter from the outside. No. Embiid's better. So Anthony Davis should be inside like he should be. And Russell Westbrook needs to quit taking shots on the outside. but at some point he has to take something because he's left so wide open. There is a shot of Anthony Davis the other night, wide open in the corner. Wide open in the corner. He decides to take a three. Nurkic is the center for the Blazers. He takes half a step, and he realizes it's Anthony Davis taking a three. He turns his head, wipes the sweat off his brow, didn't even try to go out there, turns to get ready for a rebound. Anthony Davis hits the left upper side of the backboard from the corner and doesn't even hit anywhere close to the square, let alone the rim, and the Blazers get the rebound. They don't even, and then later, Nurkic does the same thing. Westbrook has like a 17-footer, and he just doesn't even try to go guard him. Just like, it's Westbrook. I mean, and the Lakers GM just got an extension. I kid you not. What are they thinking? That's, you do not surround LeBron with guys that can't shoot from the outside. You have to surround LeBron with terrific perimeter shooters. Did you not see how he won championships? He had a Ray Allen. He had a, you know, he'll have a Kyle Korver one year. Kevin Love could hit threes. Kyrie Irving could hit threes. You got to have guys, J.R. Smith, when he was in his own, hit threes. I mean, you have to have three-point shooters. You got to have guys that can shoot from the perimeter. And then Anthony Davis, get your butt inside. But he's probably worried about getting hurt, so he missed more games. And then Russell, his stats are horrible this year. However, I will tell you this. Russell Westbrook needs to go to a bad team. He goes to a bad team, I guarantee you, suddenly he'll have triple-double after triple-double, and he'll average 20 and 12. I mean, he will. Everybody says he's washed up. No, he just doesn't fit at all with the Lakers. He's not a jump shooter. He's got to have the ball in his hands to be good, and he doesn't with the Lakers. And anybody that thought this was a good fit, I mean, you should be fired for thinking it. And yet the GM got an extension, and he surrounds LeBron with a whole bunch of guys that can't even hit the rim, let alone make a shot from the perimeter. It's mind-boggling to me.
There was I think it was their second game of the season. Kendrick Nunn, Patrick Beverley, and Russell Westbrook combined to shoot 1 of 25.
Yes, absolutely.
1 of 25. I can't. That is junior high. Junior high teams do better than 1 of 25.
Opening night, they were 2 of 21 from 3.
Yeah.
And I think against the Blazers, they were like 2 of something from 3. I think it's great. Lakers are 0-3. I love it.
I'm going to tell you, Lonnie Walker's one of the best players on your team. You got some issues. I liked in San Antonio. He's playing better in L.A. right now than he ever did in San Antonio through the first three games, obviously. He's a streaky guy. But I'm like, if Lonnie's like second in scoring in a game on this team with the guys that they have, that's not good for your team. I mean, it could be if you could develop other players with Lonnie instead of these guys that are retreads, basically, by this point of their career.
Right.
That's what they look like anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, nothing I'm sad about to see.
No,
the
me neither.
Losing, but
me neither. But if you're a Laker fan, you're like, wow, that's a great way to close the show. Have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.